All right, welcome to Wellness Wednesday. We have DJ MOB, aka Commander Torres, here today with a very special guest, Lieutenant Oya Teju, and we're going to talk about mental health myths and misconceptions to seeking care. But we're going to start out with that question of the day. What's your approach to sharing positivity with coworkers or in daily life for National Making Life Beautiful Day? So we'll start out with DJ MOB with your answer.
Hello, hello. I hope everybody's having a great day today. So the answer, my answer for that question is I usually start off the day with, I don't know, like I try to bring some humor in my unit or my workspace. It's always nice to bring some humor at the beginning of the day, start off things positively amongst my peers. And it just kind of breaks the ice. Some people, they wake up, you know, they're not morning people. So it's just nice to get them started with just a little bit of a joke. And hopefully that will stay with them for the rest of the day. How about you, Lieutenant Oya Teju?
For me, I'm into the midday pickup. So whenever I'm making my trip to the next, I will ask my coworkers if they need anything because nobody wants to walk all the way to on the spine in the heat. So I will do that for them.
That is really, really nice. I like both those answers. And I have to say, for myself, approaching sharing positivity with coworkers, I like the humor aspect and also seeing if my coworkers need something for the next two. Sometimes they'll need like a pick-me-up as well, like a Celsius or something like that. Like my coworker this morning, very nice, got me a coffee because I was like, I don't have time. Can you grab me one, please? So I love that. So what is the plan and goal for today?
So today, my goal is to build off my colleague, Lieutenant Teeter's talk when she was previously here to discuss Mental Health 101. Specifically, I'd like to discuss some myths and misconceptions about mental health in the military that tend to stop service members from seeking support. I want to break down stigmas, share facts, and create space for a healthier, more informed understanding of mental health in the military today. Just a disclaimer before starting, the comments made here by me should not be taken as medical advice. The comments shared today are my own and are for informational purposes only. They are not the views of NMRTU Bahrain, NSA Bahrain, Navy Medicine, or the United States Navy as a whole. Everyone and every situation is unique, so if those listening have questions, you are encouraged to consult with your healthcare professional or stop by the clinic, behavioral health clinic, during our business hours, which are 08 to 1400 Sunday through Thursday. We also have walk-in / readiness clinic hours from 0730 to 0930 on a first-come, first-basis.
And we'll come back after the break.
AFN The Eagle. Who the heck did you think you were listening to? Serving America's best.
And we're back after the break. So what are some of the things you have heard that stop service members from seeking help?
These are a few reasons that I have heard multiple times that we can talk about today, but there are more reasons that we can discuss in the future. A couple of the reasons are getting help is a sign of weakness. 2, PTSD / trauma only affects service members who were in combat. 3, my command will know all of my business. 4, seeking help will negatively impact security clearances. And 5, I won't be able to deploy or my orders will get canceled.
And how do you view seeking or getting mental health help?
For me, seeking help isn't a sign of weakness. It's a very human response to very overwhelming experiences. The idea that seeking help is weak, that's outdated. There are so many programs and resources available here on base. The words used to talk about mental health may be different, such as mental fitness, warrior toughness, resiliency, mental health, behavioral health, mind, body, and spirit, but there's help everywhere. It takes strength to face what's hard and get the tools you need to keep on moving forward. We treat physical injuries without question. Mental health injuries deserve the same care and respect. Being proactive about your mental health shows strength. Being in therapy is hard. This is hard work. Being open to a stranger can feel weird, uncomfortable, and awkward. Culturally, mental health can be highly stigmatized, but mental health psychology has been around for hundreds of years. Period. Mental health was mainly available to those with privilege, wealth, and good insurance, but we are here to even the scales and normalize seeking help for everyone.
If no one else in your car listens to AFN The Eagle, tell them to get out and walk. AFN The Eagle, serving America's best.
And we're back after the break. So what do you say to those that believe PTSD trauma only affects service members who were in combat?
I would say that this is a major misconception, in part due to how it's depicted in media and the news. And while combat can be an activating event or a series of events, it's not the only way to develop PTSD trauma. Trauma can result from training accidents, military sexual trauma, a loss of someone, whether it's a service member or not, who we care about, and even prolonged exposure to high stressful environments. In fact, research shows that 1 in 4 service members who develop PTSD were never in direct combat. The other things I have heard is that certain mental health disorders must look a certain way for it to be diagnosed. Although this is true, how we understand mental health disorders is ever changing. For example, internet gaming disorder, which in a nutshell is addiction to gaming. This disorder was added to the Diagnostics and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, what we call the DSM-5, in 2013 for further study and consideration under the category of substance-related and addictive disorders, which also includes such things as alcohol use, cocaine, and caffeine. Going back to PTSD is how we understand what it looks like. Question: how many different combinations of symptoms would you guess there are for PTSD alone?
Yeah, I'm not too sure.
That's a good question. I have never actually heard about any of the combination for PTSD. How many?
There are at least 636,120 combinations of symptoms, and that's just today. With the next edition of the DSM-5, there could be more combinations or less combinations, just depending on how research continues to understand how PTSD is developed. There are different levels, and one of the best ways to figure where someone lands is to speak to a professional so we can help them sort through what they are experiencing, because going at this alone can be overwhelming. Trauma does not always come with a scar. Many traumas are invisible, and although we may not remember, our body and our subconscious tend to remember. You don't have to be kicking down doors in a war zone to carry invisible wounds.
Now, going back to, you talked about internet gaming disorder. Do you see a lot of that in your practice right now?
Not typically, but it's only because when it comes to what we do, have to ask the right questions. From what I have seen in working with service members, if you don't ask the right question, mm-hmm. people don't tend to disclose or share. So if we are asking those questions, it's very possible that we may begin to see more and more internet gaming disorder or increases in internet gaming could be more prevalent if we start to ask those questions specifically.
Okay. No, I just thought I'd ask that question because I know a lot of people, you know, after work, and the only thing they do is they go back to their either barracks or their place and they just play video games. And I joke around about this with my husband. Luckily, he's retired now, so he can give them a reason to be able to do that. But I know to some, it really hinders them doing things, you know, other things, because they're so hooked on playing video games.
Absolutely. So one of the things I like to tell my patients or clients that I work with is that when it comes to mental health, the things that we are talking about can be on a spectrum. So taking, for example, internet gaming, if it's getting to the point where it's causing impairment and functioning, you're no longer doing your duties for work, family duties, then we're looking more at the disorder. But there can definitely be a spectrum of internet gaming. If you're still able to function and still taking care of business, then we may not be looking at a disorder for you at that point. But yeah, that's the point of what I was saying. Just come back and talk to us and we can let you know where you land on this spectrum so you can get some care if that's what you're looking for.
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We're not bribing you to listen, even with your great sense of humor, not to mention your great looks. Serving America's best.
And we're back after the break. We were talking about all those PTSD trauma effects to service members who were in combat. But now, what do you say to service members who do not get help because their command will know all of their business?
Just know, if this is you, you are not alone. This, like other myths and misconceptions talked about today, is a common concern that keeps folks from getting the help they need. I want to validate that there are some cases that this may be true when appropriate disclosure and confidentiality are not handled the best. Again, we are humans. That said, I do not have the exact numbers on this, but I have worked with about 30 to 40 service members who have come to mental health voluntarily since I have been here on the island in mid-February. And of these service members, I have had to contact 0 commands so far. There's a handful of DAPA cases or where the service member is escorted by someone from their command, where I have to share some brief details specifically related to concerns for safety and stability, but do not disclose diagnosis or intimate details that are not relevant. Do you know the law that protects patients' medical information?
I believe it's called HIPAA.
Right. As a medical provider, we are held to HIPAA, which stands for Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, which, if violated, can result in financial fines, criminal charges, and potential imprisonment, depending on the severity and the intent of the violation. In addition to that, I have an ethical standard that I am responsible to, which, after meeting specific requirements, also allows me to be a license to do my job. That said, do you know how confidentiality differs in the civilian sector versus in the military?
I believe the laws are clearly different for both civilian world and military, but there's a little fine line there. I'm not too sure exactly what the difference is. Could you share that difference with us?
Absolutely. Confidentiality in the civilian sector is straightforward. You're my client, patient. I protect your confidentiality for as long as I can, even after you have passed away, unless there are safety concerns, i.e. suicide ideation, homicide ideation, abuse, neglect of elderly individuals, minors, or individuals with intellectual disabilities. The exceptions to this vary from state to state and if the court gets involved.
And then just also to add to that, just working in medical. So they also put a lot of technical security in our electronic health records. So if anybody even tries to access your information electronically, they will have this kind of a warning that says you will be audited for going into someone's information. So they try to put an extra layer of security there to protect service members, beneficiaries, patients alike.
Thank you, Commander Torres.
That was really, really good information to know about that and the differences, because I think a lot of people feel hesitant on sharing how they're feeling and mental health, especially because they're just afraid of what it could lead to or the consequences of that. So it's really good to know of those protections that are in place.
60 minutes every hour, guaranteed. AFM The Eagle.
Additionally, confidentiality protections as a mental health provider for the military can be a little more complex or nuanced, because as a provider, I have at least two clients, the person seeking help and the person's command. Per DOD instruction 6490.08, command notification by healthcare providers is prohibited for protected health information when the service member voluntarily requests mental health care or substance misuse education, unless the service member authorizes the notification or the disclosure is authorized for one of the exigent circumstances listed in paragraph 3.1.B. Through 3.1.B9. So, per this instruction, I am authorized to notify commands, which is the CO or someone appointed by the CO, if there is a serious risk of harm or danger to self, others, security, the mission, or that individual is considered special personnel, or they have been admitted to an inpatient hospitalization for mental health, or they are in acute mental health condition to the point that they cannot function. And when I'm saying function, I'm talking day-to-day tasks like hygiene, grooming, being able to put on your uniform. So really incapacitated. And the last one being command-directed evaluations. We do share some details with the command when it is directed by the command that the service member be evaluated. SARP treatment could also be a reason why commands need to be notified, and Chief Wyatt, our behavioral health LCPO and alcohol and drug counselor, will likely present on the SARP program at a future day. Before I get to that point where I notify a patient's command, I try to collaborate with the patient first when appropriate. I will consult with several other providers, and if time will allow, I will consult legal. So I, along with colleagues in the medical, take your confidentiality seriously. And when I do break confidentiality, the information shared is focused about safety, collaboration, and support, not punishment. That said, if those listening are worried or skeptical because what is being said in present day news around service members' mental health records, you also have the option to seek non-medical counseling with Military OneSource, Military Fleet and Family, Fleet and Family Counseling Services. These resources have teams of trained and qualified providers like us in the clinic, but with an additional layer of confidentiality in that they do not document in your medical record, but the same safety limitations apply. Chaplains here on base are another resource that offer 100% confidentiality and things discussed that don't have to be about religion. Bottom line, in the civilian sector and in the military, if I were doing something unethical like to tell your patient's business to others that do not need to know without the patient's consent, the patient could hold me accountable, which they have the right to do because what I did can be hurtful in many ways. Being held accountable could mean losing my license. This also highlights the importance of working with someone who is trained, licensed, and credentialed because they tend to be, but not always, practiced from an ethical standard, which is typically public information, and I would say you have the right to ask about it.
And we'll be right back after the break.
From 22,000 miles in space via satellite, AFN The Eagle, serving America's best.
And we're back after the break. What about those who say, I will lose my security clearance if I seek help?
This is a big myth that stops people from getting support. The truth is, seeking help does not automatically affect your security clearance. In fact, in an article published October 2024 by DHA, the Department of Defense has made it clear getting mental health treatment is seen as a positive step, not a liability. Now, no, again, there are levels. As someone who does evaluations for security clearance renewals for service members and civilians after they have received various levels of mental health treatment. In general, if they are doing the things or have done the things to better their mental health and are stable, not perfect, but stable, they are more likely to retain their clearance from a mental health perspective. Keep in mind, mental health is just one piece, and what I do as an evaluator at my level is gather and lay out the facts and the current status, whether that be managed, resolved, etc., of the condition that is behind the inquiry. What can raise red flags is if someone struggling is trying to hide it, especially if it leads to risky behavior, substance abuse, or that individual not being mission ready. Let me put it this way. Being proactive about your mental health shows self-awareness, responsibility, and good judgment, which are exactly the traits clearance investigators are looking for.
Yeah, I'm glad that the Department of Defense had made it clear that getting mental health treatment is seen as a positive step, because over the years, going to mental health have been seen as a stigma. And it's nice to finally moving to the right direction that, seeking help is a sign of actually strength, not weakness. And so I'm glad that is moving towards the right direction.
Yes, me as well. It's still being normalized, but I feel like the more and more people talk about it and the more people are aware of it and others doing it as a normal routine as part of their health in general, it just becomes even that much more normal, I guess you can say.
Yeah, just being proactive about it versus reactive, I think that makes a difference.
100%.
And we'll be back after this break.
If we'd known we were going to be around this long, we'd have taken better care of ourselves. AFN The Eagle, serving America's best.
And we're back after the break. The last myth, misconception, is I won't be able to deploy or my orders will get canceled?
Yes. Just because you go to mental health or talk to a counselor doesn't mean you're suddenly non-deployable or cannot PCS. A lot of folks get support, get the tools they need, and keep doing their job, no issue. Now, if you're dealing with something serious that affects your fitness for duty, yeah, there might be a pause or some extra steps. But even then, it's usually temporary and more about making sure you are good to go, not grounding you permanently. I have worked with fighter jet pilots who have been grounded, usually related to a near miss or challenges in their training. They were sent to mental health by their flight surgeon and command who believed in the benefits of getting help. Many returned to a flight status, some did not, which can be the reality, but they all received care towards making them more resilient and aware of whatever they would be doing next. As an overseas screener, I have recommended that this AOR is not the best fit for some service members or dependents from a mental health perspective. But again, it comes down to safety and what we can support in this AOR. Per Mod 17, minimal standards for fitness for deployment to this CENTCOM AOR to accompany Mod 17 to U.S. CENTCOM individual protection and individual unit deployment policy. I cannot predict the future like in Minority Report, but like EFMP program, try to set service members up for success, and sometimes that means this AOR duty station is not appropriate for them or their dependents, but maybe another duty station with more robust care and resources is. Other cases that tend to be yellow flag when I'm reviewing are when service members are seeking treatment, then just fall off and their last note in the record is a cliffhanger regarding the status of their condition they were seeking help for. This can happen for multiple reasons, so no judgment there. And I owe their gaining command to you listening who will supervise these service members or will be supervised by these service members to make sure they are good to go as possible. So I request or ask for a updated mental health evaluation. So it's not a no, but rather a not yet. For those who have been in treatment and symptoms are stable, not perfect again, but stable, they may still may be struggling to a certain degree, but there are no documented safety concerns and they can be supported with our therapy and medication capabilities in the clinic, they tend to be green. Again, going back to security clearance, getting help doesn't mean your career is over automatically. In most cases, it means you are doing what you need to do to stay in the fight, mentally strong, mission ready, and focused. I know it may seem like a punishment to have mental health be a factor on your dream orders, but I'm really trying to keep that dream from turning into a nightmare with safety, stability, and security of the service member and the command in mind.
So you mentioned about you being one of the overseas screener here in the AOR. I think that's really important, especially here. We have limited services, and then we only, if I'm not mistaken, we only see service member, correct? How does that work?
Yes, we primarily see service members.
Yeah, and then just with the limited services, anything overseas, really. So I think that's really a big, you know, it's an important piece when considering a duty station. I know others want their dream, like what you mentioned, like their dream assignment. But again, at the end of the day, it's your health that's really important, not just the physical health, but also mental health. You may get a dream job, but then if you're not getting the care that you need, like, I don't think that it's worth it. Have you encountered a lot of that where people are like, I really want that dream job, but then really don't recommend it? Have you had any of that?
Yes, I have had a few service members reach out to me personally via email, and they have the option to undergo a reevaluation and resubmit for a reevaluation by one of our screeners at this AOR.
Interesting to hear about the process and how that is behind the scenes. One thing you said earlier that I really liked talking about mental health was, you said the words used to talk about mental health may be different. So mental fitness or toughness, resiliency, you know, mind, body, and spirit, and help is everywhere. And I really liked that line because there's different terms to talk about mental health, and it's all kind of similar. It's just how you take care of yourself and all those aspects is important. And we'll be right back after the break.
If the person in the car next to you isn't listening to AFN the Eagle, yell at them. Serving America's best.
And that's all we have today for Wellness Wednesday on mental health myths and misconceptions, here with DJ MOB, aka Commander Torres, and our special guest, Lieutenant Oya Teju. So we do thank you both for coming in today. And also, just any last minute comments, or is there anything you want to add?
Sure, most definitely. So just want to reiterate one more time, we're here to support in the Behavioral Health Clinic and the clinic as a whole. Behavioral Health Clinic hours are going to be from 08 to 1400, Sunday through Thursday. And for like our walk-in clinic, for on-the-spot triaging, we're open from 0730 to 0930, first come, first serve basis. And last shout out to my wife who helped me put this together. Really appreciate you. Thank you, sweetie.
I want to thank her too. Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening in.